pup must fancy themselves the successor. His hand reached up under my shirt, his nails tracing paths of fire across my chest. "Let's finish it," he invited. 17 was never a good number. It would have been easier to drive a dagger through my heart than answer. "I can't. You finish, please. Finish alone." He seized my throat. His calluses had changed again, some new labor or game making them thicker on the edges. "Who did this to you? No, tell me." As too tender Carlyle expresses anger sideways by weeping, so Saladin's sadness manifests in snarls and lust for blood. "Someone did this to you. No, tell me." He was all around me. Can you imagine? His lips hot at my ear, his left hand scraping my chest while his right stroked my inner thigh, maddening and gentle as a cat's rough tongue. I wanted him. I wanted nothing but him and me to have existed for the whole of time. "I can't," I sobbed. "I can't. They'll do it to you too." His hands tried to withdraw, but I grabbed them, held them to me, tighter. "I can't take revenge if you won't tell me," he snarled. "Then don't." We had everything we wanted. They were going to execute you. Even the cousins were screaming for your blood. The whole world was going to dirty its hands, and you signed yourself away to Mason. Someone made you do it, and left this shell of you behind. I pressed my lips against his throat so I could taste his last day's marauding, street dust, laurel branches, sweat, goats, gunpowder, sunburn, and underneath, that skin which is almost my own. "Finish it," I begged. "Kill Tully Mardy. Finish for the old Mycroft who was yours, heart and soul. That's the only revenge I need." He snarled, the lightning beauty of that snarl, and let me nip back at his bare ear where no tracker ever rests. My perfect secret Saladin. "Don't let them catch you," I cautioned. "Tully will be expecting me. They won't be ready for you. I know you can do it." I turned fully to let myself see Saladin now, the most beautiful face in the world, fierce teeth, eyes narrowed so they seemed all black like a lizard's, with no lashes, no eyebrows to interrupt the smooth contrast of eye and skin. His blonde wig had slipped back, bearing a scalp with no hair to keep my fingers from enjoying the warmth of blood within. His cheeks had once been as impossibly smooth as rose petals, or as new skin when a callus has just fallen away. But they had weathered fast these last years, and there was wrinkling around his eyes. Time. Like me, he had just passed 30, but he looked like an adult. "You've been forgetting your anti-aging meds," I chided, cupping his dry cheek in my hand. He'd had his gene splices as an embryo, as we all do, but every long year of his self-neglect made clear that they only do so much. "Meds are such a pain to steal. Don't you dare shorten your days, Saladin. Not by 1 hour, not while I'm still stuck here." He stared at me, those wild black eyes. "I need a favor," I said.
"Oh?"
His teeth traced the edges of the chunk that he had bitten from my right ear in our youth, and I, in return, felt through his threadbare shirt for the old scar above his heart, where I had cut from him my first taste of human flesh. "You know the child I often visit in the trench at Cielo de Pajaros?"
"I've seen him. I've seen nasty business circling there, too. Even the mob is scared."
"About what?"
"The black Sakura theft. And you poking around about who had the old canner device. No one I've talked to has a clue what's going on. They just don't want trouble from someone else's crime."
That aligned with what I'd guessed. "The child's name is Bridger." Suspicion turned his narrow eyes to slits.
"So?"
"I want you to watch Bridger for me. I want you to..." The words refused to come.
You're right, there are dark things circling. Another predator. I've seen them. Just a glimpse, dark, European-looking black law, keeping out of the sunlight, careful as a lynx. If it comes to it, if I can't keep Bridger out of their hands, if Dominic is about to... I had to clutch his arms tighter to steel myself. I need you to be ready to kill Bridger for me. Please? Not now. Just if there's no other way. You can do it gently. Do it yourself. I can't. You'll grip the skull with both hands and twist. I can't. I love Bridger like family. We're almost out of time, Saladin. Please. Saladin could not any more ignore the frantic beeping of my tracker as it felt my pulse race. He turned over so I could lie upon him, chest to chest, and we ravished each other as best we could in those precious seconds, lips tasting lips, hands spreading ecstasy through backs and buttocks, our rising sexes all but touching through the clothes we did not have time to open. He was the first to find the strength to break away. I'll think about it. With that, he turned his back, lifted the hood of his utopian coat, and, between the griffin cloth and shadows, my Saladin was gone. Thou traitor, Mycroft! All these years thou hast let me think that there was justice in the world, that thine evil had been caught and punished, yet here I find thy fiercer half still free. I would have locked my doors and bade my children hurry home at night if I had known. Or perhaps, reader, you take the other side. Thou traitor, Mycroft! Thou hast left me in despair this decade, thinking that we had lost our noble savage, that the last human beast still free of the chains of conscience and society had been captured and tamed, while all these years there were two of you, and the nobler, and hope with him, still roamed free. Reader, the slave I am now lays open his heart at your command, but the free creature I was back when I roamed with Saladin owes you nothing. I had no right to expose his secret until this history required. Be careful, I called to the air where he had been and might still be. Don't let the child touch you. A subtle swish of something told me he had heard. I rose as soon as I was strong enough and barely had time to smooth my uniform and hide the traces of Saladin's nails with a smear of dirt before the police cars descended to block the alley before and behind me like barricades. 5 armed police came with their commander, all uniformed in Romanova's blue, but with different cuts of jacket. A mason here, a Brillist there, an Indian or Chinese Mitsubishi. Like the many exercises of a tailor trying to pick a final form. Why 5? Not because they thought that number could take me if I resisted, but because any fewer would be too scared to approach. Even with so many, they seemed unhappy with the task. Not nervous faces, but those 2 grim expressions the police adopt to keep you from sensing anything beneath. Only their chief at the center was relaxed, slouching as he drew from his satchel the special manacles the Utopians designed for me. He tossed them to his men, as if pitching a baseball. "Morning, Papa," I greeted in common English. Do not read too much into the nickname. Everyone who knows him, from a Romanovan praetor to the lowest clerk, uses that name for Universal Free Alliance Police Commissioner General Hector Carlisle Papadelius. "Morning, Mycroft," he answered. "What was it this time?" "Some kids ran by blasting Cannerbeat." It was an old excuse, and often true. "Will this do, Papa?" one of his backup called, tapping a steel beam which braced one of the buildings. Papa shook his head. "Cars more reliable." I kept my arms as limp as possible as they shackled my wrists to the squad car's bumper beam behind me. I know the cops feel better if I make no contact, but I could not keep my fingers from brushing one's wrist, and she recoiled as at the touch of burning coal. Sometimes I think Papa brings novices on purpose at these visits, as if facing my evil were their baptism as true servants of the law.
All secure, Papa, they reported.
Good. The Commissioner General's nod let the rest fall back to the periphery, while he settled in, leaning against the curved nose of a second car opposite me. Age seems to have given Papadelius more energy, not less, as fat and muscle waste away, leaving nothing to weigh down his skeleton but his ever-burning brain. He marked his 100th birthday 2 years ago, but thanks to modern science, he still has hair on his scalp and pink in his skin, and still sprints like a jackrabbit. In my mind, his true title will always be Detective Inspector, for it was the rank he truly wanted, fleeing promotion like the plague for almost 70 years. But no pleading could keep Romanova from promoting the man who captured Mycroft Canner.
You've been a busy bee this week, Mycroft.
He used Greek now, childhood's tongue for both of us, tender to my ear, though I don't know how it sounds to those who don't associate these tones with home and storybooks, and a mother so faded in my memory now that she is little more than a warm darkness muddled with images of Mama Doll.
It's been a busy week, I answered.
And before I forget, happy Independence Day, one day late. Would you correct me, reader? It had been 2 days since Renunciation Day, but to us the true holiday was the Greek Independence Day, March 25th, when the four-century oppression of the Turks was finally thrown off, just in time for Greece to enjoy brief nationhood before nations became passé. A servicer may not, but Papadelius wore his strat insignia, the Greek flag armband in vivid blue and white. Nation strats like Greece or France or Mexico always offer less conspicuous alternatives, a bracelet or narrow ribbon, but it rankles when I see a Greek declare their pride with anything less than the full armband. Do you laugh, reader, thinking that every nation strat considers itself the most important in the world? Well, we are right. Rome was built from Greece, Europe from Rome, our modern world from Europe's Union, and however many worlds Utopia may colonize, they will all come from this one. So the triremes, which defended Greece at Salamis, defended Mars too, reader, and every hive, and you.
They're trying to keep me off this Black Sakura case, Papa began.
I know. Are they succeeding?
I'm Commissioner General. You know what that means?
You get an office in the Forum?
Cute.
His eyes glittered, the brightness of the passenger within his age-thin frame.
It means I trump the law enforcement of all 7 hives. If one, just one, says they want me on the case, no power on this earth can keep me off.
I'd learned over our many interviews just how to lean against the car to keep my hands from falling asleep.
You sent Martin in the first place, didn't you?
Yes, but I didn't expect it to be an either-or, especially not now that it's getting juicier. I've called all 7. Not just the 7. I've called senators, strat leaders, secretaries, tribunes, you-know-who. He picked at his sleeves, always rolled up as if the rank stripes around the cuffs offended him. The whole reason they forced me into the Commissioner General's chair was to get someone they could trust there. But no matter what I try, no change. His eyes narrowed. I called Martin Gildbreaker to help me help them, not to banish myself to Paperwork Mountain. The only reason to keep the police off a case is if you don't want it solved.
They don't want it solved, I confirmed.
They want it fixed.
Are they stupid? There wouldn't be this many tremors without something dangerous underneath.
Do they even have a plan for if they find something, they can't just sweep under the carpet?
I don't know, Papa.
See, even you don't know. But that isn't really what gets me. What really gets me is knowing the decision to block me was made in about 5 minutes in Ganymede's parlor.